Let's talk. John Brown. By royal command, Barnum in Europe in 1844, a small group of travellers disembarked from their ship into the port of Liverpool. There was no welcoming party. There were no bands or crowds to greet them. Amongst them, though, were the American showman P.T. Barnum and his protege, Charles C. Stratton, known as General Tom Thumb. What happened next? Rewrote the laws of entertainment in Europe. It made Barnum a household name, and it is the subject of a fascinating new book by Steve Ward and Tom Ward. I have to say that Steve is joining me live on the line now. Morning to you, Steve.
Good morning, Charles.
It's good to have
me on the show.
Yeah, where are you? Presumably, you are from some sort of you're reporting from some sort of big top somewhere. So you're on a high flying trapeze or something like that.
That would be interesting. I'm sat in my garage in a very cold Leeds, UK this morning.
Well, you've got a flirting with danger even then, so what can I say? so it's incredible, isn't it? Because if you think about it, there's no... We don't remember who was in the big top or who was playing, I don't know, Blackpool Winter Gardens in 1920. But you mentioned Barnum, and everybody's got a sort of rough idea who he is. How does this come about, Steve?
Well, I think Barnum created this image for himself. I think it's worthwhile remembering that he actually didn't venture into the circus world until very late in his life, and when he was in his 60s. But he first embarked on his showman career way back in the sort of 1830s, when having had many, many different sort of part-time jobs and sort of low-scale jobs, he decided to invest some money, and he purchased an ancient black woman called Joyce Heth, who was reputed to be 161 years old and had been the nursemaid to George Washington. So he put her on display, and suddenly everybody seemed to flock to see this exhibition. Once Joyce Heth had died, and it was proved she was only about 80 years old,
right?
He was labelled as a bit of a humbug and a hoaxer. He then went on to purchase a museum of his own, which he renamed Barnum's American Museum in New York. And he displayed something called the Fiji Mermaid, which was, by all accounts, a mummified mermaid. And he had a lot of advertising, a lot of publicity put out. And people flocked to see this wondrous, voluptuous female to discover it was a dried up, shriveled object that looked half monkey, half fish. He then came across Charles S. Stratton, who at the time was only 5 years old, and he engaged him and put him on exhibition for a year. He labelled him General Tom Thumb. He taught him how to sing and dance. This is, remember, a five-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of 1843, he decided he would embark on, he would go to Britain and embark on a tour of Britain and Europe. And so, as you on your lead-in said, in early 1844, he arrived at the port of Liverpool.
One of the things is, obviously, because listeners of a certain age, i.e. those of you who were born after sort of the year 2000, will be throwing their hands up in the air going, this is terrible. This is because we're talking about the 19th century, aren't we, here? And we're talking about where there was no social media, there was no cinema, so people went to see things that were curiosities, quote unquote. Now it would be labelled, obviously, wouldn't be allowed. But if you've ever seen that, what is it, the 1920s or 30s film Freaks? You know, it is the theatre of the macabre. You know, people like to, basically, it is, if you like, social, it is the, you know, when people send you a meme on social media and you go, blimey, look at that, you know, look at that person doing something with falling over a cat or something. This is, if you like, the distraction du jour.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's of the period, it's of the time. And you've got to remember that during the 19th century, there was an incredible curiosity about natural life and unnatural life. And as you say, there was no television, there was no radio. This was entertainment. And although the subject of those entertainments might be frowned upon today, it was something that was responded to during the 19th century. Most of what you've said, the people who had a deformity or something wrong with them who were exhibited, were in Britain were the staple of just fairgrounds, you know, penny sideshow entries. But Barnum, after his arrival, he lifted that to us to a level of respectability, especially as he really promoted himself among the gentry, the nobility, the aristocracy, and even, you know, his prime goal was to get to see Queen Victoria, which he did in 1844.
So how do people take to this when Barnum rocks up with the diminutive General Tom Thumb? Because he doesn't, you know, it's not the Hugh Jackman thing, is it? He didn't step aside with the song in his heart, and suddenly the whole, if it was a Hollywood movie, the whole dock would be start doing all that. And I'm now doing my Barnum dance here, by the way, listeners. But so how do you? Presumably he's got to try and get people interested in this. And at the time, in a dour Victorian Northwest. That's an awful lot of, you know, footwork, isn't it? And visiting various reviews.
Absolutely right. He was a master of publicity and advertising. And this is what Barnum was known for. I mean, he was well known in America because of the amount of publicity he had done prior to his coming to the UK. So when he hit Liverpool, he didn't know what to expect. Britain was an unknown country. You've got to remember, it was only in 1812, only sort of 30 years or so before, that Britain had been at war with America, and the British troops had actually marched in and sacked the White House and set it on fire. So he didn't know what to expect. He wasn't that well received in Liverpool at the beginning, so he almost immediately moved to London and there started his big publicity campaign. And not only did he exhibit General Tom Thumb, who performed songs and dances and imitations of Napoleon, etc., he actually opened up his residence for private gatherings. And at these private gatherings, he invited journalists, newspaper editors, gentry, nobility, members of the aristocracy. And once they had come and applauded what Tom Thumb was doing, it then opened him up to the rest of the public. So once that was reported in the newspapers, absolutely far and wide throughout the UK, people then started queuing up at the Egyptian Hall to view the public exhibitions of Tom Thumb. And once you've got this by royal command, once you've got the royal seal of approval, well, if the royalty could view Tom Thumb, why shouldn't we go and view Tom Thumb? It was just a roller coaster that gathered speed throughout those first few months.
So far, so much public relations, but of course, nobody's done this sort of thing before, have they? Nobody's put this sort of thing on. You know, there has always been sort of repertory theatre and people do, you know, decrying Shakespeare badly from the back of the stalls, but there's never been this sort of PR thing where you have a publicity campaign, you invite the press in. I mean, now, you know, as an established member of the Marbella press pack, I am used to going to functions and people, you know, throwing on free food and drink for me and whatever else. But you know, at the time, this was something of a novelty, wasn't it?
He was breaking new ground. I mean, there had been exhibitions before of what were then called, in inverted commas, freaks, freak shows, but they were not so well received. But Barnum, as I said, he was the master of manipulation and the master of publicity, and so he was breaking new ground. And it gave this form of exhibition, this pseudo-scientific exhibition, a social respectability. And Tom Thumb, as a character, became so popular that, for example, during the exhibitions, Tom Thumb had a leaflet produced, which was his history. And he would charge a shilling. He would sell them at a shilling. But in return for that shilling, he would give what he called a stamped receipt to any lady who wished to be kissed by him. And these women queued up. They were queuing and paying their shillings just to kiss this little man, not knowing he was 5 years old, because Barnum had added 7 years to his age and labelled him as being a 12-year-old, but then expecting him to behave like a young gentleman. Mm. So it was all very convoluted and very twisted in a way.
Here's one. Where are Tom Thumb's parents? Have they just basically signed him away for some cash and said, right, there you go? Because, I mean, this, again, it's a different time, but you would never be able to sort of transport a 5-year-old and saying he's a 12-year-old and he was a diminutive general. But where, you know, is there any, I suppose as a 5-year-old, he's not, I mean, does he get homesick? I mean, do we know what's going on in Tom Thumb's mind, as it were?
Well, first of all, his parents travelled with him.
Right.
Barnum engaged both his parents. So they travelled with him, and they were complicit in what was going on.
Right.
We actually don't know a lot about what Tom Thumb thought of it himself. I've often, you know, I try and equate it with my grandchildren, who are sort of 10, 11, 12, 13, that sort of age. And that's okay. I can imagine the 12-year-old coping, but you've got to remember, as I said earlier, he was only 5, 6 years old, and he was doing 3 shows a day, 2 hours at a time, or 3 exhibits a day. And during those shows, he would sing, he would dance, he would do classical tableaus, he would do imitations of Napoleon, as well as talking about himself and kissing all and sundry. But, and he was doing this 3 times a day.
Was there any sort of, did he have a supporting cast? I mean, or was it like,
No.
It was just him.
Just him. And before the exhibitions, a little later on, after he'd made a significant amount of money, Barnum had a miniature coach and horses. The coach was created for him, and miniature horses. And he would parade throughout the streets before his show in this miniature coach, waving to all and sundry. And he did that when he came to Europe in the following year in 1845, you know, when they travelled throughout France and right down into Spain, actually.
Oh, okay. So, what did it? Presumably, he came to Madrid. He's doing the Grand Tour, isn't he? Basically, he's doing the sort of thing that, I mean, different and classical musicals fans will be throwing their hands up at the air now. But he's doing what Mozart senior and junior did, didn't they? They're taking around. I mean, he took Mozart's father took Mozart around most of the crown principalities of Europe as a prodigy, and it's kind of the same thing here. He's doing the European tour, isn't he?
A little bit like that. He decided, I mean, that was one of his goals, was to come to Britain and then on to Europe. So he, at the beginning of 1845, he travelled over to Belgium and met the King of Belgium and was showered with gifts. He then went on to Paris, where he met King Louis-Philippe and the royal family. He met them twice, actually, during that year. And then they embarked on this tour right down through France, right down all the major cities, Bordeaux, Toulouse, Montpellier, Avignon, Grenoble, Lyon, Dijon, Nantes, Metz, and so on. And towards the end of that year, in August, September, they decided they'd had an invitation to visit the Queen of Spain, Isabella, who herself was only about 16 at the time. And they went, she was going to Pamplona. And so Tom Thumb and Barnum were in Bordeaux at the time, you know, not too far away. So they set off and they met with the royal court in Pamplona in September. And Barnum, we're fortunate that Barnum kept a copybook of letters that he wrote to all and sundry during that year.
Mm.
And a couple of his letters make reference to the visit to the court of Spain. Couple of sentences here. This is a report of the visit. The Queen of Spain has kissed the general, a kiss again, and given him a charming present. And we also, by her invitation, or rather her command, occupied a royal box and beheld a Spanish bullfight got up in honor of the Queen of Spain, her mother, and the Duke and Duchess de Nemours. So again, you know, he was being feted by royalty.
So if he's, go on. After you.
No, just to say, the other thing that Barnum did is he was also acting as a travel writer for a Sunday newspaper back in the States called the New York Atlas, so that wherever he went, he would take time out to write quite lengthy letters about descriptions of the customs and the place he visited and the culture. So he was acting as a travel writer. So this also kept his name in the minds of people back in the States while he was away for those 3 years. So that when he did return, he came home as a hero's welcome.
So, I mean, and obviously the reputation spreads far and wide and they become incredibly wealthy off the back of this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Both of them. At first, Barnum engaged Stratton, Tom Thumb, for a salary. And then partway through the tour, they went on a profit share basis and they both made thousands and thousands of pounds.
Well, so if he gets rise when he's 5 and then it's 3 years in Europe, so he's 8 years old, I mean, the one thing that Barnum must be terrified of is a growth spurt, presumably.
Yeah, but he didn't. He right. never grew. He remained at 23 inches tall, and he only weighed 15 pounds. And throughout his lifetime, Tom Thumb, Stratton, never varied much from that at all. And you know, it must have been a punishing routine. They were on the road all the time. You know, they rarely stayed in one place more than a week. So Barnum would be traveling ahead, doing all the arrangements. Tom Thumb and Entourage, his parents would arrive shortly after. They'd start performing. Barnum would then move on again to the next place. And so it was a continual rolling tour.
Now, you've got sort of, you've got the you know, the holy grail of any historian or any historical writer. You've got primary sources. You've got news clips and the whole thing like that. Is there any correspondence back to the States from Barnum, or perhaps from Tom Thumb or Charles Stratton's parents? Because obviously you spend 3 years on the road with people. I mean, we've all spent weekends at our in-laws and had to sort of bite the furniture to stop ourselves saying something. But if you're on the road, so basically living out of, you know, it gets better as they go along and you've got your own fleet of small horses in a carriage. But presumably there are tensions and this sort of thing, because, you know, it's the classic cliche, isn't it? You know, you're happy on stage, united front, and then you get off backstage and you're absolutely bitching and cussing each other.
There were moments later on in the European leg of the tour where tensions did arrive. There was some talk about the elder Strattons, the parents, talked about going back to the States early, and that there had to be discussions between Barnum and the Strattons to resolve that. There was questions over money. If the tour was foreshortened, then they would be, if I'm right in remembering, they would do their 50% of the profits, which Barnum didn't want at that stage. Barnum referred to himself as Tom Thumb's, he used it severally, manager, organizer, and at one time he used the word guardian, and the Strattons threw their arms up in horror, especially Mr. Stratton, who said, look, you know, you're taking away my paternal right to my son. So there were tensions there all the time. And you have to read that they just bubble up through the letters occasionally. Barnum himself was very homesick. He missed his wife. His wife was ill at the time. One of his elder children was quite poorly. So he became very homesick. He himself complains bitterly about the fact that the tour is punishing him. You know, he's losing his hair. He's lost weight. And towards the end of 1845, you can sense in the letters that he'd had enough. He wanted to go back to Britain. Well, in fact, he wanted to go back to the States, but, you know, he wanted to stop in Britain to make a little bit more money first. Mm. So, those tensions were there, but you have to pick through the correspondence. But, of course, we never get anything back to Barnum. We only have his letters going out from him. We don't have any received, so we're not sure what's coming from the States, you know, because he's still running a business in the States. He's still running his museums. You know, he's got a manager who's doing exhibitions there for him. So he's just a busy guy all the time.
And the book is called By Royal Command, so presumably, you know, spoiler alert, he gets to, Barnum gets his goal, he gets to meet Queen Victoria.
He did. In fact, he met her in 1844, and he made an unprecedented three visits.
Good grief.
To Queen Victoria. He met her first in March, and he was very clever in how he engineered it, you know. He had a letter of introduction from a newspaper editor in the States. He presented that to an American ambassador in London. He had dinner with him. At that dinner was the master of the Queen's household. You know, little bits of hints were given. And lo and behold, you know, it wasn't long before he had an invitation to attend the palace. And I've just got what Queen Victoria said, if you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely.
On that first one, she wrote about it in her diaries. So access to her diaries was very useful. She says, after dinner, we saw the greatest curiosity I, or indeed anybody ever saw, viz. A little dwarf, only 25 inches high and 15 pounds in weight. No description can give an idea of this little creature, whose real name was Charles Stratton, born, they say, in 1832, which makes him 12 years old. He's an American, gave us his card, with Gen Tom Thumb written on it. He made the funniest little bow, putting out his hand and saying, much obliged, Mama. One cannot help feeling very sorry for the poor little thing and wishing he could be properly cared for. The people who show him off tease him a good deal, I should think. He was made to imitate Napoleon, do all parts of tricks, finally backing out the whole way of the gallery. So, you know, you have to remember Queen Victoria was a relatively young mother at that time. She was pregnant with a fourth child at that time as well. So she seemed to warm to him. She had this sort of curiosity, but there was a bit of empathy there as well, I feel. Mm. But she invited him back another two times, which was totally unheard of in those days.
Fascinating. What was the spark behind this one, Steve? Because you've written it with Tom Wall as well. What was the spark then that got you interested in this one?
Well, Tom Wall was my editor, and in discussion, I did some previous books with him, and we were exploring ideas. And we were talking about Barnum, and I mentioned, well, he started off talking about The Greatest Showman, which we won't go into detail now.
No, and
let's not. Catchy music, lovely dance routines, short on history. And I'll probably get slated for that now.
Well, hey.
But we were talking about it, and he said, well, nobody's really written about his time in Britain and Europe, and you've got feet on the ground in the UK, and, you know, there must be some primary evidence there, primary sources. And I started digging around, and it became quite a fascinating journey, really, in the end.
Have you reevaluated then your thoughts about Barnum? Did it make you think, I mean, not perhaps you hadn't really thought much about Barnum before, but, you know, Hugh Jackman notwithstanding. Do you, when you research something like this, are you more in admiration for the man? Are you just thinking, well, he was a person of his time? Or do you think, you know what, I really, there was this guy really gives me the willies?
I wouldn't quite go that far. I mean, I have admiration for the way that he used his publicity machine. I thought he was very clever in what he did, and he was obviously driven for approbation, really, and driven for money as well, I think. But the more I've read about him, I have some serious questions. There are some ethical questions that I raise about how he treated his exhibits. I mean, another example was while they were in France, he came across some Siamese twins, what we would call Siamese twins, conjoined twins now. Who were joined at the head. And his immediate thought on seeing them, when he wrote back to America, and I can't remember the exact quote, but the essence of what he said was, I just came across some twins joined at the head. They will make us a good deal of money. I'm going to try and engage them. You know, there was no thought about the humanity of what he was doing. Same with Joyce Heth, the aged black woman. Mm. When she died, there was an autopsy, but he made it a public autopsy and sold tickets to the event. So, you know, you have questions. Tom Thumb, a 5-year-old, put on the road, exploited, maybe. Tom Thumb, he made a lot of money out of it, Stratton, but, you know, was he exploited? And the same goes with all the others that he used. You know, there were other people as used.
What do you hope the people are going to take from your book?
Well, as you started at the top of the item, you said that, you know, everybody knows the name Barnum. And if you talk about Barnum, people nearly always say circus or The Greatest Showman. And I hope that by reading this book, people get a lot more information about the man and get something of the feeling of the essence of the man there as well, so that they can make their own informed opinion on him.
And, of course, for those who are fans of the earlier musicals, of course, there's Michael Crawford as well doing his thing forever in the West End, doing his Barnum thing as well. That dates me. The book is called by Royal Command. It is by Steve Ward on his own, excuse me. I put your editor in there by mistake. If people want to find you online and, you know, and talk about that trapeze artist act you're thinking of doing, Steve, in Leeds, where should they go?
Well, you can visit my website, which is www.steve-ward.weebly.com. You can find all about me on there. You can track me down on social media, on LinkedIn, or you can,
There's a myriad of ways to find you. You'll be up, and by the way, listeners, you can also order the book, pre-order book, because it comes out tomorrow, I believe.
Yes, it goes live tomorrow.
Marvellous. And you'll be able to pre-order it and then receive it via our own virtual bookstore. This book is called By Royal Command, Barnum in Europe. It's by Steve Ward. Steve, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today.
Yeah, thanks very much, Charles.